No, that's fine. I think we'll make a decision on this at the end, but I think we are looking towards acting. Councillor Gerrard, final word.
Thank you. Stephen, who would make up this panel?
No, that's for us to decide.
It is for us to decide.
Okay.
And wouldn't it be best to go for scrutiny?
Yeah, what would happen with the panel's suggestion is if we agree it, it would go to the Scrutiny Management Board.
Yeah,
We would discuss it there. We might not necessarily go to a panel straight away. We might have a report from the officers, so there's a report coming. After reading that report, we'll decide on the next step forward.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That's what I was looking for. Thanks.
Stephen, thank you very much on this matter. Is there any further questions on this planning or regeneration while we've got Stephen here? If not, I won't ask you to leave in case we do come back to questions. I'm going to go on to the second item, which is Alison Simmons is here, Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing. And that's regarding the homelessness reduction grant posts and to extend the changes to the service. So Alison, if you over to yourself, and then we'll ask some questions.
Okay, Alison Simmons, Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing. The Homeless Reduction Act that's going to be implemented from the 3rd of April is the biggest change in the homeless legislation for 20 years. It will change completely the way we work. It's a new system, it's a holistic assessment, it's not just about housing, it's the circumstances that people have become homelessness or becoming homeless, the support needs of the applicant and what accommodation would be suitable for them. What we currently have is we have a prevention duty that we carry out. If somebody's not homeless within 28 days, then we move into a homeless application. With the new system, as soon as somebody is possibly going to be homeless within 56 days, we have to take a homeless application, which at the moment we do take an application, but not a full application, because what we're trying to do is prevent. So once we've taken the application and we've completed an assessment, we will then have to draw up a personal housing plan with each applicant that comes through. Now, this is a contract between the council and the applicant, so the onus is on the applicant to take ownership for some of the actions, whilst the council will take ownership for others, and this has to be monitored. Once we've done that, there are then three stages of the duty, where currently there is just one for homelessness. We have 56 days in which to try and prevent homelessness, so that's if somebody has still got accommodation, so they've been served a Section 21 notice. If they're at a point where they haven't got accommodation, we move straight into the relief duty, so then where we need to provide them with temporary accommodation, and we have to then look for alternative. Now, if during that period of 56 days we don't find them any accommodation, we then move into the actual homeless duty. Now, it's only at the very end of the duty that we then even look at whether the applicant's in priority need, whether they've got a local connection, or whether they're intentionally homeless. So in the prevention aspect, the first 56 days, anybody can walk in from anywhere across the country, and we have to provide services where currently we could refer them to an area where they have a local connection. It's not until we get to the relief stage, when we've got the action plan up and running, that we could refer them, because then we can look at whether they want to go out to the particular area where they've come from. So it's going to be a huge change in the way we're working. We started to try and pilot this to see how it implements. Where an interview was taking an hour, it's now taking 2 hours, because you've got to take a full application and then you've got to start agreeing the actions. So the other implication it's got as well is we need to find more accommodation, so more prevention opportunities for people. So, and with the only change that's been made in relation to the council's statutory duty is we need to provide accommodation that lasts for at least 6 months, where currently it's 12 months. So that's a reduction, but then you could say, well, in 6 months' time, they could end up coming back through the door. Mm-hmm. Now, I've looked at what's happened in Wales and in Southwark, where they're currently holding a pilot. They've seen their caseloads rise from 15 to 70 per officer, because you've no longer got
To confirm, from 15 to 70.
To 70 cases per officer. We have seen an increase in applications since I've been here in March 2015. And if I just give you some figures in relation to homeless acceptances from 2016-17 to where we are this year, we're up by 8% increase. And again, the other side of it, not only needing additional resources to actually...
Sorry, so I'm going to interrupt again. Sorry. That 8% increase, what's in numbers? It might be from 1 to 2, for example. Yeah. What's in
so, in numbers, it's from 125 up until 197, so that's 42. No, 72.
That's more than 82.8%.
That's a hell of an
8%. Yeah.
I'm holding
it. I'm
wrong
line, sorry.
It's almost
60%. So, yes. Oh, sorry. When I'm talking about percentages, I'm talking about the percentage of acceptances opposed to applications. So it's not a difference in the figures.
Okay.
It's how many applications we're taking and how many people are actually accepting.
Okay, that's fine.
So,
yeah,
sorry.
So we've had a, from application 125 to 197.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but we've actually accepted people. The other aspect is the provision of temporary accommodation, which when I arrived, and maybe I shouldn't put it like this, but when I arrived in March 15, we had 9 people in temp. As at today, we have 50. So we've seen a considerable rise in the amount of people because we're going through the process of taking a homeless application. In relation to our housing register, again, that's increased. Obviously, there's less accommodation from a social perspective. And where, again, when I arrived, people taking 4 months to be housed for a one or two bed, they're now taking 12 months plus. So in relation to the temporary accommodation figure that I've requested additional funding for, I can see initially, until we can get landlords on board and we've agreed some kind of incentives to get landlords to work with us to charge local housing allowance rents, because we will need to do that, that there will be a rise in temporary accommodation. And this year we're going to be overspent by approximately £10,000 at this point, but it could increase. So that's why I've asked for a doubling, because I can see that the number of people walking through the door will double. I could go on, and I could throw more figures at you, but I don't know if you need any more than that
fine.
As a general overview.
We've got some figures in the budget there, that's why we've asked you to, but I'm sure members, if they want to draw on any more, they can do. So Alison, did you finish, or is there anything for that?
Thank you very much for that.
So members, we've heard the thing. I've got Councillor Jukes first.
Yeah, going back to your problem of finding housing and making negotiations with the landlords, on the 3rd of April at the same time, you get a whole new raft of laws on HMOs that have to be licensed. It will change dramatically. Are you taking that into account with your workload?
Yes, that's a separate issue that, again...
No, it's under your aegis, is it not?
It is, yes.
So, that's the question I'm asking. Are you prepared for that volume of work that will appear on the 3rd of April?
From the information that's been pulled together from the Professor in relation to the HMOs and the impact of the change in legislation, it has at this point only identified 90 properties that would need to be licensed. Now, we have gone back with some more data to get to see if that is the correct figure. So, at this point in time, I haven't asked for additional resources for that side of my service, because until I've got figures, I can't give you evidence to say I need this because of. So that's why there isn't a service request, a service pressure in relation to the licensing aspect.
With all due respect, Chair, some of the figures that we've been working on, HMOs, have been proven to be way out of court, and it's something that is going to happen. And I quote from Mr. Sharma, subject to parliamentary approval, flats, one and two storey properties will be subject to licensing. Those who landlords who are banned would be listed on a public database. Things like that. Enforcement is a major problem of this.
I think Councillor Jukes, just sorry to thingy on this.
Yeah,
we're talking about the figures that are on the budgets there.
I'll withdraw.
Any other members, sorry. If not, I've got a question for Alison, if you don't mind.
Yes.
It's the increased budget for temporary accommodation, which is £140,000. So that's the service pressure we've put in. At the moment, we've got 10, 50. How much are they costing us each, on average, these people in temporary accommodations per annum, approximately?
It's £120,000, the budget,
mm-hmm.
plus we think we're going to overspend by £10,000.
So about
£130,000.
Plus another £140,000 on top.
Yes. And that is, it is a guesstimate, because, mm-hmm. again, I don't know how many people are going to walk through the door.
Okay.
And depending on the type of person that comes through the door as to what type of accommodation we need to provide.
Okay, so that's say £250,000 temporary accommodation.
Yes. And it's linking back to previously when we did have an issue where we were paying out £250,000 when you look at the numbers in relation to bed and breakfast accommodation.
Wow, that's just temporary accommodations.
Yes.
Right, with my landlord's hat on, so apologies everybody. three-bedroom terrace house in Loughborough, £500-600 say per calendar month, say £7,000 or £8,000 a year, say £8,000 a year. That's a lot of houses that the council can afford to rent out to people in temporary accommodation. Just, you know, thinking, you know, we've got 50 people.
Well, that is why, as part of the work that we're undertaking, is to recruit a social lettings coordinator to look at how we can work with landlords, joining together with what the Empty Homes Office is doing, to formulate a landlord's offer, as i.e. an incentive of maybe a finder's fee, and then maybe we could manage. But there's a lot of things that we're taking forward at the moment to come up with an option to offer to landlords. So yes, I completely agree. If we could find accommodation, I'd much rather put somebody in suitable accommodation that lasts for a period of at least 6 months rather than putting somebody in temporary accommodation where they've got to move again.
Thank you. Councillor Parsons.
Yeah, I have two more general questions on the HRA on the report, and also from looking at the terms of reference, I want to make my own reference of the capital plan as well.
Okay.
On page 10, item 41, I'm conscious of the wording, I'm conscious of sitting in a meeting a year ago. I'm looking at 41 about the £110 per property and the readjustment. I'm pretty certain from my notes that I sat in a meeting some time ago where we were quite proud of the fact we were running at around £140 a property. And I'm conscious of the wording that just talks about it's been adjusted to reflect the recommended minimum. Does that mean we've reduced it and used the money elsewhere? Because I sat in a meeting where we were quite chuffed that we were running at around £140 a property that we had.
Claire, would you want to come on that one? It's to do with the HRA reserves, budget reserves.
Yeah, I'll need to see the papers from whatever meeting you're talking about on the £140 property.
How much is it at the moment?
Person with that memory in here, from the council side.
It doesn't ring the bell with me.
I'll need to go and get that out because I'm 99.
We'll come back to that, Councillor Parsons.
The numbers are pretty good. And I say that we were announcing it around £100,000 of property.
Councillor Barker.
Well, I think the amount of money, the capital spend that we've done on housing is significant. We're now meeting the Charnwood standard. How much we have per house is perhaps a bit of a red herring. We know we've got 110. Whether it's 140, 110 is really irrelevant. What is relevant is, are we providing decent homes to our residents? And we are.
I think I'll speculate on I'll try and answer what I think the questions and what I think happened. So the £110 per house is what we need, or what we adjudge, or strictly speaking what I adjudge, I guess, needs to be the HRA working balance. So that is the amount, and I think that's, as Claire points out here in paragraph 41, that's what we're proposing to maintain. I think what happened is we have had in recent years we have had underspends in the HRA, so in effect reserves have grown. And I think what we've done financially is, reflecting both that availability of additional reserves, we've siphoned off the reserves above the £110 a house to reflect the need to repay our debts, which are, because we took out significant borrowing for the housing stock, so about 79, 80 million, I think, in total, it was a number of that order of magnitude. Plus, as well, subsequently, we have the 1% rent reduction year on year. We've also got a potential issue around right to buy and the government potentially wanting compensation what's an RSL called now?
A registered provider.
So now there are the latest rules are that when registered providers, they're subject to right to buy, so that they will need to be compensated for those properties, and that will potentially come from us. So with the combination of those factors, and given that we had additional reserves created due to historic underspends, what we did was create another reserve within the housing revenue account. So there are two reserves now. One is the HRA working balance, which is a balance we need to, or we judge we need to maintain to manage any financial shocks. And then the other reserve, which is earmarked for repayment of our debt, plus other issues that we've identified in terms of rent reduction and...
It appears to me, from joining the dots, that we had a bigger reserve, I'm not moaning about the acronym, Councillor Barclay's correct, our job is to serve the provision, which I'm more than comfortable with. My job here is to scrutinise numbers and budget figures and to understand. So what it feels like and seems like to me is we have £140 a house and I'm presented with a report that was shooting to £110, but doesn't tell me where the other £30 a house has now gone, whether we're covering underspend, using that elsewhere. So that's all I'm trying to highlight, the way it's worded, the way it looks, and the figures coming back.
Thank you.
Claire Hodgson, Head of Finance and Property Services. Again, I'm not sure where the 140 has come from. I've just pulled up last year's draft budget, and at that point it was £110 per property in the draft budget papers, and the working balances based on 5,618 properties were 618,000. So we've got slightly less properties and a slightly reduced balance, but it is the same as it was this time last year.
Councillor Barclay.
I think the other thing worthy of note is that our capital plan says we're going to spend £17.3 million on our housing stock, and I personally, from what I've seen, the figures I've seen, £30 a house or whatever, they're spending £17 million on the housing stock. We are maintaining the standard of our housing, and that's what it's all about. We gather in the rent, we use it on those properties. We have 5,800 or whatever it is properties, and the budget can accommodate that and is achieving what we want to do, and providing decent housing for our residents.
Second question, point 44 on page 11. I just need an indication whether the 6.2 million in 44 is about right as to what it should be. So it says the anticipated bond treasury financing fund at 31 is a 6.2. Is that what it should be at this point in the cycle? Should it be bigger than that? Should it be less than that? Is that good? Is that bad? I'm just after an indication of whether that's an appropriate amount at this point in time.
It's well, I'd like, obviously we'd like to think so. To a large extent, this is a function of underspends, and the fact, and it was an opportunity to create that reserve to reflect the uncertainty we've got. I think going forward, is it the right amount or not, is something that we actually assess through the process of actually the 25-year business plan we do for the HRA. So obviously within that, we look at the profile of sort of rent increases, look at the profile of debt repayments, look at our level of reserves, and that actually in the round, then that drives our plan for the capital programme and understanding how much we want to invest and what the timing of that is. Because clearly we need to maintain the reserves to ensure that the housing stock can be maintained and we can survive any capital shocks. The other side of that is we don't want to be retaining excessive reserves, and we need to actually expand the capital programme to keep the house up to a decent standard, or the Charnwood standard, whichever we would like to look at it. And also if we did particularly well, for example, we would start to consider building our own stock. So that's quite a complex process, but you know, on the good side we can do something like that. On the more negative side, what we would potentially have to do is amend the capital programme to reflect the sort of future cash flows. The good thing is the cash flows are relatively stable. The debt financing we understand, so the sort of the bit we have less understanding of really is the rent and how that increases or otherwise.
Is it statutory? When you say in the first paragraph the HRA financing fund is required, does that mean it's required in a statutory sense or is it required as in a functional sense?
Functional sense.
Councillor Parsons, can I just come in there? I think you've got a point there. Because we don't know if 1 million is sufficient or 10 million is sufficient, and we've got a figure of 6.2 million. And I think Cabinet might need a steer here. And what I mean need a steer is not to say where to use the money or what to do with the money, but what may be an appropriate amount
of
money.
It's a comfortable level of risk.
Yeah, that's it.
All I'm looking for is an indicator. I'm given a figure, but I don't have an indicator as whether we're comfortable with that.
Okay.
Am I comfortably satisfied?
As Section 151 officer, I'm comfortably satisfied. I think we're on the right side of this. I think the issue for us is, I mean, again, I'm not going to guarantee this, but I think the issue for us is more going to be around making sure that we don't have excessive reserves and how we're going to amend the capital plan to ensure that reserves do not get excessive, rather than us having to reduce the capital plan to increase that level of reserve to ensure we can repay our debt. So I think we're on the right side of it, in my judgment, as Section 151 officer on what I currently understand.
Cheers, Sam. I'm going to go to the lead off with that.
Sorry, I have one more.
Finish on this point.
I think just to give the panel some reassurance, their rural budget position for 18-19 is a surplus of 383,000. The decrease in the surplus compared with 217-18 is a result of an increase in the capital programme, reduced rental income due to 1% rent reduction as per government guidance, and also revenue pressures increasing the spend in the year. So we're not about to go under.
No, thanks very much.
I believe that. I don't think that.
Just before we go on to your third point, just on this reserve. You said something about we're using the extra money to pay off the debt that we've built up on the housing account. So is that what we're doing actively, or is that what we're going to do after we've built up the reserves and then pay off in lump sum?
The debt is scheduled at the moment, so it's fixed term, so we know when the repayments will fall due. So obviously when the repayments do fall due, they're quite lumpy in nature. I couldn't precisely tell you what the profile is, but there's not just one loan, there are a number of loans, and they're scheduled from, I think 10 years in is the sort of first time we start repaying them, up to 15, 20 years. So it's obviously backloaded, and clearly when we put a fine £10 million, we need to make sure that we've got it. So that's really what this is about, and having this reserve in place at the moment obviously gives us a nice feel that we're able to pay those debts as they fall due. But nonetheless, we don't want to end up, if I was being stupid about it, that we end up with 79 million in reserves now to pay it all in 25 years' time, which would be quite unnecessary. So it's a question of matching the resources we've got and being comfortable we can pay our debts as they fall due. But it is quite, as I say, we know when the debts fall due, we know what the housing stock is, we've got a certain level of reliability on the rent roll and the rent income, but there's obviously things like welfare reform which may impact on that. But we can be reasonably comfortable on this, and because we do a 25-year business plan, it isn't particularly a volatile situation, so we're in a position to manage it quite well, really.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Councillor Barber.
One of the things we did was, when we did this business plan over 25 years, we locked in some of the lowest interest rates available in the last 300 years. The debt interest itself costs us 2.8 million a year. Obviously, we have to build up funds to remake the capital repayments eventually. But I think one of the reasons we were in a mess before we took control of our own housing and took on the debt from the government was that, in actual fact, we are having to pay a negative subsidy to the government, which is why our housing stock of a million a year. So we were taking the rents in, having to pay the government, central government, a million a year, and in the interim, our housing stock was in an appalling state. It is now above the decent home standards. That's where we want to be, and that's where, you know, that's with all the best will in the world, that's what we're aiming to do, is make sure that we continue to have more than adequate housing, that we provide our residents with the Charlton standard, and looking at it prudently, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Thank you very much. Councillor Martins.
I raised this in the meeting in December, the informal meeting, and that was just just the conflict in my mind of sitting in one meeting, hearing one thing, and seeing figures on a page. So I sat in the meeting, I think it was full council, where we had a discussion around 17 houses that we'd look to buy back, and only one was suitable at two bedrooms, and I don't think we bought it in the end, or we might have. And then I was shocked to see 1.953 million in the budget figure in the capital plan for housing acquisitions, when it seems that we are struggling to buy one a year at a significantly lower level. So I was fairly shocked to see 1.95 million in the capital plan. I think it's allocated acquisition of affordable housing to meet housing need, which absolutely we should do, but it seems an excessively large amount given the problems we've had in acquiring one this year from Buy Here. So I can only go on what my fellow councillors said in full council, that I was just surprised to see a figure so large given the problems we've had buying purchasing property.
Yeah, I can remember that council meeting actually.
Alison Simmons, Strategic and Private Sector Housing. There's two things there that you're putting together. In relation to buybacks, what I was asked was, have we looked at buying back properties before? We're always looking for two-bed accommodation because that's the highest need we've got within our housing register. Of the ones that we'd been offered back at that time, and this is to do with right to buy sales, within the first 10 years there's a covenant that we have to be offered them back. We look at them, we look at the whether they meet a decent home standard, what work would be required to them, the cost of them, where they are, and would we have anybody for them. And within that period of time, over that 5-year period, she had one that came back that was a 2-bed house. Now, in relation to the 1.983 million, that's more to do with the right to buy receipts that we've had back that we can use 30% of towards the purchase, which the HRA has then topped up to give us the overall figure, the additional 70%. Now, up until the end of December, we had to spend, £352,000, and we have just exchanged on two properties from the open market to meet the desired need of what we require. Buybacks can be limited because, one, they're not necessarily in the place where we want them to be, and they might not be in the condition where we've actually gone out. So in relation to the money that we've got there, we will be going out and we'll be actively seeking additional accommodation to increase the stock for the council.
Okay, thank you very much for that one. Thank you, Councillor Parsons. Okay, so we've had open discussions on the housing homelessness. Is there any further questions to Alison regarding the homelessness figures that are in the budget? No. Thank you very much, Alison. Okay, which brings us to item 3, which is electrical works programme. I've got Peter Oliver, Head of Landlord Services, and it's questions that we're going to ask you on the 5-year electrical works programme. And an explanation of the plan itself. Thank you very much, Peter. Over to yourself.
Thank you, Chair. So, under electrical regulations, the Council has a responsibility to conduct periodic electrical inspections and tests at its properties, and the standard interval that's defined within that guidance is every 5 years. Under the Landlord and Tenant Act, we also have a legal responsibility to make sure that electrics on our properties are safe, therefore the adoption of a 5-year inspection regime is considered appropriate. At present, electrical condition reports are completed at void, so when properties become empty, mutual exchange, swap properties, and when decent homes works are undertaken. So when we go along and we do a new kitchen or we do a bathroom or a level access shower, for example, we do an electrical test at that point. And if there's any additional works required, we do those works there. We've also recently undertaken a programme that's been targeted at properties where it's thought that no condition report has been undertaken for many years, and that programme's approximately 50% complete. However, at present, we don't currently have a scheduled and recurring inspection regime in place, and this is what this is about. We do need one, because we need to ensure that the Council remains compliant with regulations and keeps tenants, their family, visitors and officers safe. A detailed programme of electrical tests is currently being compiled. So we've made some assumptions around the number of condition reports required over the next 5 years, and we've used those assumptions to arrive at the likely volumes. We estimate that around 3,059 tests will be required over the next 5 years. So what you're seeing is the figure for the next year's tests, and that figure includes the amount to do the test and also an amount for any additional works that are required. So it could be a small work that's required, you know, fixing a socket or something like that, mm-hmm. or it could be a full rewire of the property.
Okay, thank you very much. Do members have any questions? Councillor Gerard.
Thank you. How much do you put aside for really serious work to be done? If someone's come in and tore out a load of stuff, do you put extra by just in case that has happened, or is it a set amount that you put by to do repair work and general maintenance? Do you have a contingency?
That's detailed in there are other budgets, so there's a voids budget. So there's a budget for when a property becomes empty and we have to go in and we have to do the works. Then works are undertaken at that point. If the tenant had damaged the installation, then we would look to recharge the tenant or the former tenant thereafter. And then, of course, we have day-to-day repairs budgets as well, and they're the budgets whereby if an item fails or if it requires renewal, then we do it at that point.
But if they've done a moonlight, is there a special contingency or just a contingency put by to do the remedial work?
That work is accounted for within our existing budgets. Yes.
Right, thank you.
Councillor Seaton.
Councillor Seaton, thank you, Chair. So, I promise I was listening. But if we could just go, so your testing of electrical appliances was ad hoc, and I say was. So it, whenever you needed to do work in that particular property, you did the electrical checking as well. But now you're going to do a programme, and you're 50% through that programme, have I got it right?
We're going to do at present, there's no rolling inspection programme in place. Okay. So absolutely. But we do electrical tests when we do decent homeworks, when the property becomes empty, when people mutual exchange as well. So and then we also looked last year, we recognised that there was no rolling programme in place, and we saw that there was obviously a gap there. So we looked at some of our properties that we thought hadn't had any of that activity. Mm-hmm. We put a programme in place to kind of address that risk with a view to then putting a rolling programme into place. So on a planned basis, year on year, so we know, for example, so that we will know, for example, next year we need to do the electrical tests to X number of properties to ensure that everybody's having one every 5 years and that we're keeping people safe. So that's the purpose of this programme.
So this 318,100 is annually?
It does vary on an annual basis we've made some assumptions because we know
love assumptions
because we know what decent homes work we're going to be doing over the next 5 years, so we know the number of kitchens we're going to do next year, the year after that, the year after that. I say we know, we broadly know, we can estimate that at this point in time because we know what the life cycle of those is, so it does vary year on year.
Right, so As a landlord, I have to have gas checks, not electrical checks, just the gas checks. So is it a statutory requirement to do that, or is it just good housekeeping?
It's a legal requirement to make sure that the electrics at properties are safe.
Has to be done every 5 years.
That's detailed in the Landlord and Tenant Act.
Yeah.
And then the electrical regulations state it recommends an inspection period of every 5 years.
Of every 5 years. Okay, so that's recommended. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Jones, before I come to yourself, I've just got one point of clarification on what Brenda said. It says here that it's a one-off, this figure, 318,100. But you just said it is variable, but similar amounts every year. So is it a one-off, or are we going to spend it every year? Because if we're going to spend it every year, shouldn't it be on an ongoing column? And then next year we'll have it a different figure, but in the ongoing column. I don't know.
Sorry, Claire Hodgson. Thank you, Councillor Mia. What happened was when the budget pressure came forward, we weren't sure of the exact figure. So we've put a figure in as a one-off for 18-19, while some more investigations done, we work out what sort of the average is going to be. When we put the pressure in next year, it will more likely be an ongoing figure, but we'll have some more evidence to back it up in terms of what the actual figure will be. So it was a decision taken at senior management team that because we don't know exactly what the figure is going to be on an ongoing basis, we should put this one in as a one-off for now, do some more work and then bring it back.
Okay.
To council the following year.
So.
Councillor Seaton. Councillor Seaton, thank you very much for that. And that was the reason I brought it up in the first place, because we didn't know whether it was going to be a one-off every 5 years or a one-off every year or just a one-off. So in future we'll know which column.
It's definitely gone in. Councillor Duke, safe to you.
I'll listen to what you said. Could you tell me what sort of time frame you're looking at to initiate a rolling programme, and what sort of time it would be for that programme to have been processed and go back to one?
Yeah. We've estimated that over the 5 years, there are 3,059 properties that require an electrical test. And we've worked out what we estimate. So we have to catch up. It's over the 5 year period.
So there will be a differing figure after this
each year.
This particular year, when we pull the figure out, that will be accurate on what we actually have done each year on operating the electrical systems in council housing. Yeah?
Yes, because what we'll do is we'll get a copy of the electrical certificate and then upload it onto the system. We'll say this test has been done on X date, yeah. And then we will know when we need to go back yeah. and do it. And at the well, moment, we're undertaking an exercise where
so
we're reconciling
we
all
will
of
be
our
able to monitor it as such.
Yes.
Yeah. Councillor Seaton.
Councillor Seaton, I'm just actually amazed that that hasn't happened previously. I would have assumed that it would have been on a rolling basis already. So thank you. That's all I wanted to
do. Yeah, thank you very much. Are there any further questions on this item on to present to Peter? No. Okay. Are there any items? Any questions on any of the three items that the officers are present for that we need clarification on? If not, I'm going to ask the officers if they would like to retire and leave while we discuss the rest of the budget papers. And we've got Councillor Barclay and also Claire Hodgson here who could answer any questions that we've got on the budget. Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Right, so coming back to the actual general fund and HRE budgets, before we draw our conclusion, we've got Councillor Barclay here, who's lead member for finances, and we've invited him specifically to come to this meeting. Do we have any questions that we'd like to ask him regarding the budget or anything that we'd like to get clarification on? Maybe direction of travel, but I think we've covered that one off. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. And is there anything else on the budget paper before we come to draw to our conclusions that we want to do with Claire or any of the officers present? Anything that we're not sure about? If not, I have just one simple question.
Sorry,
Councillor Gerard, yours.
Thank you. I know I asked if there was a contingency fund and it all came out of one pot, so to speak. But what if that pot was exceeded? You know, we're doing a 5-year electrical thing, we're doing this, we're doing that, but if so much came more, the whole thing would be up and down like a yo-yo going year on year. You know, could we have
it's a general question on reserves, basically.
Yeah,
spend more than we've got in reserve.
Obviously, we schedule, so that's what the head of services job is, to plan and schedule the work and assess how much we need, which is what the service pressure is around, and why actually as a senior management team we did say, well, that sounds reasonable, but come back next year and justify yourself. So that was the sort of process we went through internally. But that, you know, that sort of if something happens and we need to have a lot more spend on electrical works or something else, that's what the £110 a house reserve is. So that's why we assess. £110 a house on average is what we would have to cover financial shocks of that type of nature.
Would that cover the bare bones, or it would be a bit fluffy kind of thing? You know, if you follow what I mean.
I think fluffy is probably the term there. Yeah, it's just an assessment. So £110 a house. So if it was every single house needed something doing, £110 probably wouldn't take you that far. I think the assumption is, if there was something
exactly.
that needed doing, it would only be in certain types of houses or classes of houses or particular locations. So, but you know, £110 a house is our assessment, and that was based on the work. Going back some years, there were some regulations where the government concluded that you weren't allowed to have transfer more than, or you had to retain a certain amount within reserves, going back in the sort of housing finance legislation some time ago. But we thought that was a sensible basis on which to create.
That's
our
one
reserve.
Room decorated.
Sorry,
one room decorated, and that's what started my mechanism working.
Yeah.
You know what can. £100 it cost me, so what could I get done for £10 in a house?
Councillor Buckley.
Perhaps I could try. I think Peter explained that we're doing a massive sort of 3,000 properties that they're looking to get electrical standards up to date. That is above and beyond the £110 per house.
Ah.
And it is also above and beyond the £17.3 million that we're going to spend on the housing.
Thank you.
So the £110 is almost a sort of meltdown scenario where we've used everything else and is there enough to do it? We're not looking at that being the only spend. That is what is a prudent reserve deemed by the government to have. But we are in fact going to do a lot more than that.
Thank you. I understand it now.
Yes, thank you. Any further questions that you've got? Claire, Sajid Javid, he made an announcement just before Christmas regarding council tax and the percentage that we could raise potentially. I'm not saying that we will, but potentially before we have to go to a referendum. How does that impact us and this budget, specific budget?
So Claire Hodgson, it doesn't actually impact this budget because the percentage that he gave that we could raise before going to referendum is actually under the percentage that the actual amount that district councils are allowed to raise. So we are still allowed to raise the £5 on a banding, which is what we were proposing. So that there's actually no impact on this budget.
Okay, thank you very much. That's fine. Councillor Barker, is there anything further that you'd like to add before we...
I don't think so. I think we've examined the budget in detail and... But I don't really have anything else to add. We have a sound budget. We are confident we can deliver our corporate plan and the business plans in place to do it. I am not a prophet. I can't foresee what happens in the future. And I don't think, well, to the best of my knowledge, nobody else here can. Okay. Legislation, everything's changing the whole time. We still have a certain... We work with a certain amount of uncertainty. As the finance and property has said, we still await the settlement on the business rates. I've chastised her guesstimates on the... she was 30,000 out on the settlement on the home new homes bonus, which I thought was quite good, but the actual other thing is was spot on. So we do have officers who are competent, who do know what they're doing, and so I would just give you that reassurance. We have professional officers and I have confidence in what they've done.
Councillor
Parsons, the salary settlement reference at the beginning, which is still ongoing, is that a one-year settlement?
The offer that has gone out is actually over 2 years. So the percentage that it would go up by for Charnwood, based on some rough calculations, is about 2.16% in 18-19. And about 2.5% in 19-20. So obviously when we do the MTFS going forward and when we do the 19-20 budgets, we will have those figures.
Yeah. Okay. It's maybe just worth adding that offer doesn't include all staff, so that we've got NJC staff and JNC staff is a terminology, but the JNC staff covers anyone on PO. Covers all the heads of service and directors, so that's obviously the higher paid staff. The offer doesn't include them, so obviously it may be the same amount or higher or lower. But it's at the moment the figures, as Claire mentioned earlier, they are estimated at the moment, so we haven't got the full picture.
We have included a potential pay rise across the board. So,
I saw in the sensitivity analysis in the MTFS, there's a 2% case scenario in there.
There was, yes.
In the MTFS, so that kind of, it's within, 2.1 within the realm of reasonable on that, those grounds. So is that the total salary cost? That's not additional pension, etc. That's the total. The figure you mentioned at the beginning of 215,000. That's a figure in totality that we think at the moment annually. So as I'm looking at the MTFS, so I'm acutely aware of just balancing the figures. I'm looking at the 1.519 for this year, which has changed the 893, but I recognise there was a deficit last year that we didn't end up spending, so dot, dot, dot. So I'm sitting here looking at the MTFS and I'm going to be adding 600,000 across the MTFS cumulatively for the 3 years in my head when I look at the MTFS. So that's my starting point, just for the salary. There's nothing else. That's the totality of it. National insurance, pension, that figure is a totality. There's not, that was just a salary bit. There's this bit now, there's a plug-in, and this bit, and this bit, and this bit. Just ballpark. It's just my thumbnail figures and my calculations.
I think the question is, when things like the pension, was it 2% on all of our costs? Because obviously that would apply to the employer stuff as well.
Yeah, we'll work those out when we bring the next set of figures forward. So when
when the final proposed budget is, I think that goes out at the end of January, beginning of February. Yes. So when those papers come out, everything that's in there, that will be in totality.
And those final papers, they're cabinet papers at the end.
There's
of
cabinet,
so
and then they go
to
council.
I need to be on my game to pick up the cabinet papers the day the cabinet papers come out, because that will be an updated set of budget.
It will, yes.
And obviously, cabinet, the resolution for cabinet will be to recommend the budget for approval of council, so they will reappear as a council paper on the, I can't remember the precise date, it'll be around the 26th of February or the 29th, not the 29th of February, will be.
It's 26th.
And it's
going to cabinet on the
15th. I recognise there shouldn't be, and there probably isn't, but I'm not looking for anything Machiavellian, I'm just thinking in my head of process here. Is there a point where, if there were, I can't imagine what it would be, a substantive change in the next period of time for those papers, it just goes to cabinet anyway, it doesn't get an opportunity to come back here, there isn't something that makes it come back here if there's some dramatic change?
It's out for consultation as we speak. If there was something dramatic, obviously it would come before cabinet and also come before full council. But I can't foresee anything more dramatic, and we've got to base it on fact.
Yeah.
I haven't got the sight of prophecy. I don't. You know, I can't tell you what's going to happen. I can only go on what we have actually factually. And I think as head of finance says, the figures that come through will not be available to me or anyone else until they come to cabinet.
Yeah.
And at that stage, it will be subject to scrutiny, either scrutiny, overview and scrutiny, or any scrutiny management board. So the opportunity is there. But we have to deal with what we have presented.
I get that completely. Okay.
Thank you very much. Right, drawing to some conclusions, because obviously... Oh, sorry.
I just want to ask one question.
Yeah.
The salary increases, you talk percentages.
Mm.
Is it percentages across the board? Like if I earn 200,000, I'm going to get 2.9% of that. But if I'm getting 30,000, I get 2.9% of that.
It was based on banding, so no, it wasn't across the board. There were, I think, it was skewed towards lower paid.
The reason I ask is the problems that Stephen Stray has got.
Yeah. It was more around that there were different bandings with different percentage increases. So what we've done when we've calculated the really quick figures was actually taken those into the banding, so that is taken into account. It probably potentially won't help with the planning issues, because I think they're more the higher paid staff who are dealing with the queries, and this is skewing it. And it is national. It is a national pay offer, so it's not something that Charm would have actually...
Oh, no, it's national.
Yeah. So
that doesn't make it right.
Generally, rule of thumb, it's 2%. It works out above 2% overall, because there's low paid staff, particularly around those who are around the between living wage and between minimum wage, living wage. So I think the idea is to bring those staff up to a sort of living wage, and that has certain complications in the way it sort of bubbles through our banding, so that's sort of a complexity we have to deal with.
Councillor Seaton for
Just a quick in, just to clarify for me, and I think I know the answer already. Are we governed then on planning to what we pay?
Right. I will attempt to. Simon Jackson, Corporate Services here. So the problem, but we have a pay and salary structure and grading scheme that is based across the council. So it's called the Hay Scheme. So there's various implementations of the Hay Scheme. So if your job as evaluated scores a certain number of points, that puts you on a certain pay scale, and that's what you get paid.
Like the NHS,
likely. So that's how we do it. So we've got some mechanisms to actually to sort of flex that slightly in terms of things like market supplements. But those market supplements only apply to new recruits and only apply to a limited period of time, and they're not. they might help a bit, but they're not necessarily that attractive to encourage people to come along. So it might be a 2,000 or 3,000, to be honest, but it's probably not enough. It's probably not enough to make a big difference. So the issue we have is if we wanted to pay, you know, there's 200, let's say, let's call it 200,000, if we wanted to pay 10 people £20,000 a year more each, then that would give us a big issue with other staff groups on the same grade across accounts, because they say you scored 200, I scored 200 points, the person in planning scored 200 points, I want £20,000 increase as well. So it's not just simply a question of being able to pay people in planning more. What we'd have to do is look at the entire pay and grading structure and seeing what we have to do with it, and obviously that's a large job with a certain level of complexity.
Right, so that is something that we as Charnwood have set up, or we as belonging to the council great thing.
Our grading structure, our job evaluation scheme is Charnwood specific based on Hayes. So obviously lots of councils use a similar system, but there is a specific implementation of Charnwood. A number of points you would get on the job evaluation then matches to a scale point, that the pay for that scale point is something that is derived through the local government employers, and that is national. So if you're on scale point, and Claire's one here, so I'll make up one, pick a number between 6 and 34?
No, 12.
Call it 17 then. So
yeah.
So if you're on scale point 17, your salary is £18,672 per annum, and to be on that scale point 6, you would need to score say 200 points. Now it is possible, and it is something we've looked into a little bit, that if you had an identical Hay scheme to ours and you scored 150 points in another council, that might, you know, the 150 points in the other council might match to scale point 6. So
okay.
It's not. So there's.
Ah, right. Okay.
So that's sort of how it works. Of course, everyone has a different Hay scheme.
So your base can be started.
And we have, and in fairness, we did look. We have done an exercise internally at looking at how our salaries compare to other councils, and we took a number of jobs. So we did sort of. I think it was 6, 8, 10, what we just thought were beacon posts. So there's a couple in planning, there's IT, legal services, so jobs where we had issues in recruitment, and looking at like for like, we generally conclude that Charnwood was not out of kilter with others. I think some of the issue is potentially salary, but I think some of the issues are that there's just actually a shortage, so we're fishing in a very small pool for a lot of these jobs.
So can we, or do we, go to universities for this and get graduates in and from planning, and do we nurture that at all?
That's something we would potentially do through the
apprentice agreement for here. That's for
making a point that problems with retaining staff in planning are not unique to Charnwood, it's across the country. And particularly in London, it's 10 times worse.
Have any government allocated some of money for it?
I don't know, to be honest.
I think that's the £212,000 we're discussing.
Brilliant. Okay, we need to draw some conclusions because we've had a recommendation for a potential panel. But also draw conclusions so we can put it in a report and that goes to Cabinet. So coming back to the panel issue first, the panel regarding...
Could you excuse me?
Yes,
I've got my wife, I'm taking my wife out, but I'm more frightened of her than I am of you.
I'm at least sensible.
Cheers, thank you very much, Councillor Barclay, thank you. Sorry, we've had a proposal that I said to Scrutiny Management Board that we have a panel to, I don't know, look at the paper that's coming into the Cabinet. I think that would be sensible. I don't think we're going to go to a panel straight away.
No.
But I'd say that, to consider that paper.
So
how they consider that paper is up to
with
that.
With a view to decide.
So,
can I just think, so you want the suggestion that a panel be set up that obviously, what about, are you going to wait for the cabinet report, or are you going to see what that's in there first? Or?
I think that would be sensible.
So,
so it needs to be put down as an agenda item, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Following the report to consider setting up the panel.
Yeah.
So that's all it needs to be.
Yeah. Right. Just and then so we'll make a decision at the scrutiny management board what to do after we've seen the paper.
I mean, this scrutiny, this is a budget scrutiny, so you don't have any more.
No, that's why we have to. We send it to scrutiny management board, and then they will action that. That's how it we hope it works, isn't that?
You mean it as if to influence this?
Yeah.
Well, so which we can't do that at the moment. So.
Yeah, but I actually wanted to pass a. I've moved on from that now. I wanted to pass a comment about the budget that we were here to scrutinise. Overall, I've been quite pleased. There are a lot of uncertainties, some of which have been more or less resolved. I'm not sure that any of them have been resolved totally. There's still an awful lot outstanding. But I think the officers and together with the lead have actually put an awful lot of effort into making sure that the risks have been covered to a sensible degree. You can't cater for everything. You'd be silly to try. But I think the areas that are risky, I think they've put adequate contingencies in that cover that, or taken a view that if necessary they're sufficient in reserves where they don't need to cover it in the budget. And therefore I would actually say that we recommend this to the council.
Before you go to that final one,
recognising that it's still at the moment a draft, and we still have the final one to come.
I think what we have to be wary of is, if we go to page 3, paragraph 5, is that there will be a deficit in this budget. What the final figure will be, Claire will know when she's got the final settlement figures and all the. But I think it would be prudent of us to point that out to cabinet, that we've looked at that figure to say, and then put everything else that you've said. After that, because that is a risk to the council. There is a risk that there is a shortfall.
Councillor Parsons, I would want to word things, a number of points I'd like to make. One is, and again, I wish Tom had gone, because I don't wish to say things behind Tom's back. So I wish he was here to hear it. We, if I go back to the analogy, we run a pretty good motor car, and it's doing great. And relative to an awful lot of councils in this country, we are in rude health, relatively speaking, as we currently sit here. If everything here is as is, and I have no reason to believe it isn't, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there is now, given the 200,000 of salary pressure on this year, 1.7 million of operating deficit, which has been met partly by the fact that we underspent last year and we didn't have to subsidise last year. And whilst we have ongoing savings, the 200,000 salary will go in. That's no fault of anyone in here. That's not a political point. That's not a fault of officers, councillors. And I feel, when I look at the corporate plan, that we are just beginning to move into territory that makes me twitchy, because we're continuing to tinker with the beast and make sure the wheels are on and the engine's running. But you know, in a fast-changing world, that's not enough for me. And I'm not content to be mediocre or average or pretty good. I want to be excellent, and I want to serve people incredibly well. And we've got to work on that. We've got to send cabinet a message that we've been good, we're in good shape. It's actually not enough for me. I want us to be phenomenal and going in a place that's really strong for the people of Charnwood. And I looked up the corporate plan for the umpteenth time while we were sitting here, and I put the corporate plan next to the numbers, and I don't draw the clear lines through to the corporate
plan. Can I just cut you short there, just quickly, to be succinct with what you actually want wording?
Okay, but I'm going to say it and then I'll come out with it. Final point I also want to make is I want a message to go to Cabinet over the Loughborough special expenses. Mm-hmm. Now, Cabinet have gone some way, or this Council has gone some way to addressing that, the appointment of somebody whose specific brief is Loughborough. But I find it grossly unacceptable to come to a budget line of £1.2 million circa, and be told I can talk about 30,000 of it
and I can't invest any of it in capital. I can't invest for the people of Loughborough. I can't invest to bring in more money for the people of Loughborough services, and the whole issue around Loughborough special expenses, which I hope Councillor Boker will be addressing. I noticed that Loughborough special expenses isn't referenced in her cabinet brief, and I don't know whether that's just an oversight on the website or whatever else, but I would want a very clear message. I for one will struggle to support anything to do with Loughborough special expenses. I want to, my gut today is I want to put a caveat for myself around it, so I refuse to vote for that because I don't feel attached to it. I don't feel I own it. I don't feel I've made decisions about it. I don't feel I've represented the people of Loughborough in that £1.2 million.
I think a lot of Loughborough councillors, Loughborough-based councillors...
And again, it's not a political point, it's just my personal sense of responsibility. I feel I struggle to put my name to that, okay. And I'm very conscious of collective responsibility, and I will put my name to it this time round, and I'll put my name on the document that I support the budget going forward to Cabinet, but I'm really struggling this year. Now, mm-hmm. I understand better. I was dumb and innocent last year, but knew it wasn't quite feel right.
Okay.
Now I understand it a bit better. I'm a million miles away from loving it.
Carried on.
So those are two messages.
Would you be able
to
that second part? Put it in.
I'm sure you can find a summary of those points.
Yes,
because you'll be able
expressing
to
your concerns.
Yeah.
But as
the rest of the panel agree,
it's my
with that as
my
well.
Concern. Other people can have their say. Those for me are two messages. One is that we are in good shape. We have done that by 7-8 years, however long we've been here, of doing a good job with the numbers and providing our services.
I would go along with the second point, definitely, regarding the special expenses.
Times
chair
are changing.
If the rest of the panel weren't in agreement.
Well, I tend to stay away from the Loughborough special rate because none of my constituents pay any of it and don't get any benefit from it.
Yeah.
I tend to leave it to the Loughborough Council.
Is it good enough then just to say that you feel uncomfortable to vote on it, or should you make a go a little bit further that it needs to be and I'm sure we've said it before, it needs to be investigated as to the alternatives, a working alternative.
Maybe we'll put that in the line.
It's no good just chastening about it.
Sorry, Councillor Seaton.
And we can send that message to Cabinet that from a budget scrutiny perspective and from the Loughborough Special Expenses meeting, which takes place as part of the budget scrutiny process, I can't find a way of dealing with it anywhere else but through the budget scrutiny process where the meeting takes place. I would wish to send a message to Cabinet that I personally will find it very uncomfortable to attend that meeting next year if the Loughborough special expenses is in the same shape with the same decision making processes with the same boundaries around it. And from a Loughborough perspective, that's nearer to something I would wish to go to Security Management Board for serious consideration. But I'm hoping that the appointment of somebody with responsibility for Loughborough, that will come into their brief. I don't know the full extent of their brief at this point.
Maybe that's something we can explore in scrutiny management then.
Yeah.
That would be a recommendation to the scrutiny management board then.
Yeah.
Of
or
how we take that forward.
It's alternative options of how it's looked at in the future. And it might come out from the scrutiny review as well.
Yeah,
possibly.
That's fine. Okay. Brilliant. Thank you for that. So moving forward to our recommendations or our suggestions or our wordings, then it'll be that we have concerns that we're going to be £1.7 million overspent. Albeit that in previous years we have underspent or we've carried forward underspends, which have meant that we haven't actually gone into deficits. I think that would be correct. Also, we need to put concerns that the economic realities out there are different. Now it's rising interest rates and rising inflation, whereas in previous years it was lower inflation and lower interest rates. I think that's a caveat that we just put in there.
Some assumptions have been made on the working tax credit, but that's wrong.
The universal credit.
Universal credit as well.
I think you need to be explicit with
terms,
because I recognise I'm beginning to border onto the political there with that number. There is an operating deficit on the budget this year, but with underspend last year, that has been prudently managed this year. Or prudently reduced this year.
Well, we can say in neutral wording.
You've got concerns around meeting any requirements that come forward as a result of the rollout of universal credit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't made any financial suggestions for the budget this year, so are we happy not to put any forward?
that's fine. Yeah, in previous years we've suggested
outside the box.
Okay.
One of our major problems, which I mentioned earlier, is planning and keeping staff.
I was going to come on to that one. Right?
Yeah, well, I'd like you to think about this when you're talking about it. Okay. Is there not a way that we can increase the charges for applications and people who make retrospective applications
that's
to fund salaries in planning?
That's probably some scrutiny work we have to do afterwards if we do it.
That's not basic business, but if we could only think along that.
That's not for this specific meeting, but
it'll be a separate meeting somewhere.
That's fine. But also drawing on what we've discussed, those three areas that we've discussed officers with, so that should be in the report. So we've spoken to the head of plan, well not head, but his representative, regarding the income and expenditure, but also the restructuring of the department and concerns were raised about the amount of money that were going to be increasing charges and then spent on restructuring. I think that should be highlighted. Yeah. But it also should have highlighted that the majority of that money is going towards retention of staff. That's what it is in essence.
Mm. Yeah.
But if our hands are tied though, salary wise,
it's true.
Amount of money. If we're hands are tied on the scales, it's hard to understand what it can be done.
Yeah, mm. That's not to criticise. That's just to point out and to say this is a significant increase.
Mm.
And then that we looked at the homelessness and reduction grant and the number of, I would say, residents or people in temporary accommodations.
Worrying.
Yeah, to worry, and the trend mm-hmm. is worrying. And we discussed the electrical works program and thought that was very prudent for the council going forward and protected itself.
Yeah. And as I say, I was really shocked that it didn't happen already.
If you're a homeowner, you'd check it every so many years, wouldn't you?
No, but if we're a landlord, yes.
Yeah.
I'm happy with all these. I think you need to pray. You know, Tom is right at one level that we need to pray see this at the front end with the fact that these points we're raising are in a light of continual provision of good service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, all that will be in there.
Increased satisfaction levels from our customers, and it's all in the good light. My issues are not one of criticising how we got here and where we are now. All of my points are about what I want to lay out as a vision for the future for us to drive forward to, and that's, I think I would want that to be very clear. I always want to say I want to see the report before it goes, but now that we're starting to discuss these final summary bits, but I want to make sure it's done in the context that we have looked after and put ourselves in rude health at this point in a very difficult cycle, which is not getting any easier. However, going forward, just continuing to turn the engine on and off, check the tyres and do the oil pressure and make sure everything's running smoothly won't be enough to sustain the vehicle. We need to turn the vehicle and go somewhere and make it work and really drive a good vision for the people of Charlie going forward.
Yeah, conscious, and then the grant, however the grant is called now, is it the revenue support grant, is going to be dwindled. Mm-hmm. It's dwindling to zero, basically, that's what they've said.
Clearly, the MTFA, the government wants it to be more self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And I think we should take that on board, and I think we should have some pride in wanting to be self-sufficient.
I don't want to highlight that we want to keep raising charges, though. That's the thing. That's not what you don't
want to do. I want to be proud to be self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. I think our people would like that. I think our population would like that. They'd be proud of themselves.
Brilliant. I've got enough of a steer for the report, final report.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you need clarification on?
Not at the moment, no. I think so all this we've put into a report going to SNB on the 24th of January.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very much.
That makes it easy for you, Karen, do
we? Well, like a challenge.
Yeah, this is a recording.
Oh, yeah, you can just re-read. Yeah, that's fine. Brilliant. Thank you very much for meeting.
After the last meeting, I feel bad that I called for Karen now. I can't quite get my head around after that last meeting.